Brenda.
Like I said, this is a speaker meeting, and I'm going to turn it over to Jay to introduce our speaker.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
I'm looking forward to hearing our speaker's experience, Strength and Hope. I've been attending meetings with her for the last, must be close to 2 years. I know it's more than a year. She does service down at NA at Home, and she's been around the program for a while, and I always enjoy going to her meeting. I like the way she does service. We've had multiple conversations before and after the meeting. I'm looking forward to hearing how she got clean, how she lost the desire to use, and found a new way to live. So without further ado, Brenda, would you share with us?
I am honored to. Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi, everybody. It's, you know, it's real. Jay, thank you. Thank you for that. It's been close to 2 years now, and I do so enjoy that meeting at NA at Home in Australia, and I call it my international home group. And I want to thank the members of this home group who are of service to this meeting, who keep this meeting open for people to share in their recovery together. I trust that someone's going to let me know when my time's up. I appreciate Steve. I know Steve isn't here, but I've met Steve through NA at Home and online, and it's been really great. We've been working together. I was first scheduled to come and speak maybe about a month and a half ago, but then I got COVID and I was really sick. So we rescheduled it. So I appreciate his patience with me. And it's just a joy to be here. It's a joy to be in the UK. On for me, it's a beautiful Saturday morning in California. And, you know, it's just always an honor to be asked to come in and share my experience, strength, and hope. And if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, I want to welcome you to a new way of life and let you know that you don't ever have to use again, even if you want to. And, you know, I just have, right now, I just have so much joy in my life, and it wasn't like that when I got here. Narcotics Anonymous has been my solution for my disease of addiction. I believe I have a disease that is incurable, and like our literature says, that it's cunning, baffling, powerful. It was definitely more powerful than I was, and it can continue to be if I don't treat my disease. And for me, the way I treat my disease is with Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I'll share a little bit of what got me here. I try not to spend a whole lot of time there because we all have our story about how we got here. But, you know, I got clean in the greater Philadelphia region of Narcotics Anonymous. That's in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania in the United States. I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. And I come from a biological family of a bunch of addicts. A bunch of addicts and a bunch of chaos, a bunch of abuse. You know, our family system was completely devastated and torn apart. There were seven of us. There are only three of us alive today. We were torn apart. We were broken up. We were all sent into the foster care system. And so I was in foster care when I was about a year and a half old. I have a twin sister, and miraculously, they kept us together, which often did not happen in the 60s. But we remained together, and we were placed in the system, and I remained in the system until I was emancipated at 17 years old. And I was already in full-blown addiction by that time. I talk about that just to give you a little idea of where I come from, but I want to be really clear that I've come to understand through working a program of recovery that, you know, I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous because I was a foster kid. You know, I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous because, you know, my whole family was very violent and abusive and broken up, and, you know, kids were being shipped off into a million different directions. I didn't come to NA because of that. I didn't come to NA because I'm a woman. I didn't come to NA because I'm gay. I didn't come to NA because I, you know, was born in a rural, violent home. I came to Narcotics Anonymous because I am an addict who suffers from this disease. And my disease got me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. For that, I am forever grateful. You know, but my life was kind of destined from an early age to not have a lot of good luck. And for many years, I used that also as an excuse for my behavior, right? So I used the fact that I was a foster kid. I used the fact that that I was in the system. I used the fact that I, by 17, was living on the streets. I used all of that as excuses to continue down the path of destruction that I was on. And I used young. I used hard. I tell the story sometimes about there was this time when I was about maybe 19 years old, and I was, you know, I was hustling. I was doing what I had to do to survive another day and to, as it says in our literature, to get one more, right? Use to live and live to use. And so it was just one of those days. It wasn't a special day. It was just another day in the life of my active addiction. And, but this one I remembered so clearly because I was hanging out in the subways of Philly, and it was wintertime. And, you know, we used to say it gets bone cold in Philly in the winter, right? And, so I would hang out in the subways because it would keep me warm. And I had to come up out of the subway for, you know, to get one more. And I realized that when I came up out of the subway, it was so cold. It was freezing and it was sleeting and snowing. And I realized I didn't have any shoes on my feet. And I always want to remember that because I'm pretty sure when I started my day that day, that I had shoes on my feet. And I have no idea what happened to my shoes. But here I was in the middle of winter with no shoes on my feet, just socks. And now I'm wet and I'm bone cold. And I'm trying to find just one more. And I always want to remember that, because if I ever start thinking that maybe I'm not an addict, maybe I don't need these meetings, maybe I don't need step work in my life, you know, all the things that we do, I have to remember that. I have to remember that day and the desperation that I felt. And by the way, I didn't get clean that day either. I kept going. It says in our literature, and we read it, you know, we go on to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, and death. And I was clearly already imprisoned in my own mind. I was already institutionalized in my thought process. I was bound by my addiction, and I did whatever it took. And there was this guy that I knew. I tried to work for a minute, and I couldn't hold a job. But there was this guy at this job that I had, and he knew, right? He knew, and we talk about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And he used to say to me all the time, when you're ready for a new way to live, let me know. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, yeah, I'm okay. In fact, my problem was you, right? So if you guys would just leave me alone, I'd be okay. And, you know, it was all that process of denial. But he used to always say, when you're ready for a new way to live. And it took longer. It took utter desperation. It took, for me, it took degradation. It took, you know, when I was in foster care, I had a foster mom who I call my mom today. She's my mom today. She's 94 years old. She's stronger than all of us. Yeah, I always say she's going to outlive all of us. And She's still back east, and you know, that woman took me in her home, treated me like her own daughter. And when she would look at me when I was in my active addiction and just shake her head and just say, you know, I could argue with a lot of things. I could not argue with from this woman, and the shame that I felt. We talk about the spiritual and the emotional deaths that we suffer as a result of our addiction, and that was clearly where I was. And so one day I remembered what that guy said, when you're ready for a new way to live. I went into a rehab when I just couldn't do it anymore. And I ended up in a rehab that brought Narcotics Anonymous meetings in. So I'm eternally grateful for hospitals and institutions, our committee, one of our committees in Narcotics Anonymous, the H&I committee that brought an NA meeting to me when I was in that facility. And that's where it started. And I don't remember much about those early days in that facility, but I remember that NA meeting, and I knew that when I got out of there, I needed to find NA meetings. And so that's what happened. And I believe today that it was divine intervention. I am not a religious person at all, but I believe that there was nothing that I could do. And it talks about in our readings, you know, it says that, you know, many of us sought help through other means, psychiatry, religion, all of those things. None of that ever worked for me. The only thing that ever worked for me was Narcotics Anonymous. So when I got out of rehab, I found my meetings, and I heard some really simple things. Sometimes we call them cliches, we call them suggestions. You know, I call it the recipe for living, right? So I heard the same things that we still talk about today. The basic purest principles of Narcotics Anonymous that's found in our literature continue to sustain me today. And they were the same things I heard. I heard them in my first 30 days clean, and they continue to work. And it was things like go to a meeting every day for 90 days. Sometimes I get a little frustrated sometimes in meetings today when I hear all the time we say stuff like go to a 90 and 90. And that's cool. I get what they're saying. 90 meetings in 90 days. But if I heard it like that when I first got here, when I got clean, they said go to a meeting every day for 90 days. If they had told me to do a 90 and 90, I would have started to do math in my head because I was an addict, right? I would have started to dope fiend my way around that. And I would have said, okay, I can go to 2 meetings on Saturday, 2 meetings on Sunday. That's 4 meetings. I don't have to go to a meeting on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, and I can still be in that 90-90, right? Like, so I am so grateful that I heard go to a meeting every day for 90 days. And that's what I did. And I believe that we say that for people who are new to give us a break and give us a chance to really, you know, it took me 90 days to just come down, right? It took me 90 days to land. It took me 90 days to figure out what this whole, to hear what I needed to hear to make it another 90 days, right? Like that's, I am so grateful for that. I heard things like come early, stay late. I really didn't have anywhere to go. I was unemployable. I didn't have a place to live. I had a garbage bag full of my worldly possessions when I got here. And so, yeah, I was showing up early. I couldn't wait for them to open the doors. I was staying late because I had nowhere else to go. And I was afraid of a lot of things. I thought people were following me. I thought people didn't have genuine motives. Like when they invited me out to the diner after the meeting, I thought they wanted something from me, but I just kept showing up. I just kept showing up, and I'm grateful for that desperation that kept me showing up. I heard things like, get a sponsor. And I had no idea what a sponsor was, nothing. I was clueless. And but then I heard, you know, men stick with the men, women stick with the women. So I looked around the room and I saw the cutest woman in there, and I said, she'll be my sponsor. Now, I never asked her. I didn't know that that's what you're supposed to do. But the next time I went to that meeting and you guys asked me if I had a sponsor, I said, yeah, she's sitting right over there. And it was totally wrong, right? It was like totally, I never used her. I never called her. I didn't know you were supposed to do all that. But I felt like I was now doing this thing called recovery. And that's the beauty for me that continues to be my truth. In recovery, I don't even have to understand it. And it can work. And that's when we say stuff like, do it to the best of your ability. At that time, in my first 90 days, that was the best of my ability. I spotted someone, total wrong motives, but I thought that I was doing this thing called recovery, so I kept coming back. I finally figured out what a sponsor was supposed to be, and there was one woman. There weren't that many women, by the way, when I got clean, and but there was one woman that had 5 years clean, and I thought she would, like, ran Narcotics Anonymous. I just couldn't believe anybody had 5 years clean. And most of the people at the meetings didn't have 5 years clean. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, call me every day for 30 days, and I'll think about it. And, you know, I instantly got pissed, like, who does she think she's talking to? But what I said was, okay, because I had no other, there was no other option. NA was the last stop on the block for me. So I called her every day for 30 days because I was afraid not to. And I also share that back then we didn't have cell phones, right? Okay, so, you know, the 1900s, right? And so I had to hustle up change. I had to go find a payphone. And I had a caller. And if it rang too many times, I would lose my quarter, right? So I had to make sure I had plenty of quarters. But that's like how we did it. And they told me, you guys told me, if you put half the effort into your recovery as you do into using, you'll be just fine around here. And I hung on to that. So I just kept doing the deal. I kept showing up. I kept suiting up. I heard things like, be of service to Narcotics Anonymous because Narcotics Anonymous is saving your life. So do something to give back to NA. And I didn't know what I could possibly do to give back to NA. So someone told me, we'll make you the coffee maker. So just make coffee. Well, I was horrible at making coffee. I don't drink coffee, so I had no idea how to make it. It was horrible. They told me to keep coming back anyway. And eventually they got me a new commitment because I was so bad at coffee. But nobody ever said, you suck and we don't want you here. Nobody ever said that to me. So I just kept going. I kept going to meetings. I kept staying late. I kept going to the diner afterwards to hang out with other members. I got a sponsor. I was of service. And by the way, I've been of service to Narcotics Anonymous ever since, right? Like these are all the pieces of recovery to me that continue to apply today, right? These are all the things that kept me clean then, and they keep me clean now. I kept coming. My life was a mess. They told me it was going to be okay. You told me it was going to be okay. You never said it was going to get better. You never said it was going to get great. You never said that life was going to be anything more than what life is, which is life on life's terms. But what you told me is, as long as I don't get loaded, it's going to be okay. And, you know, that's that part when we talk about, I love in our literature when it says that this program is available to us all. It says that when we read We Do Recover, it says that it's available to all of us, that any addict can get clean, stay clean, and find a new way to live. And so I got clean. I was staying clean. I had no idea about this new way to live. So I just had to keep coming long enough, right, to figure it out. I always tell newcomers when I see them come in the meeting, please just keep coming long enough, right? And things started falling into place. Okay. Then there was this magic that started to happen around the steps. I didn't understand anything about steps or traditions when I got here. We only had the basic text. We didn't have all the nice literature that we have today. We had the basic text. And my sponsor made me read the basic text. I said, when do I start the steps? She said, we'll get to it, honey. Just start reading. And you know, so I did, and there were stories in that basic text that I related to. When I started working on some steps, my first round of steps were totally different than the last round of steps I just worked. with my sponsor, right? Because my first round of steps was all about the chaos. It was all about the insanity of using. It was all about the people I owed money to. It was all about the fact that I didn't have a place to live. It was all about the fact that I needed a job. It was, you know, all these things, all this craziness, all the wreckage of my past, right? It was about the behavior that I brought into the rooms, right? Because I remember when I finally heard that I needed to leave my weapons at the door, right? Like we used to say that, right? We used to say, leave your drugs and your weapons at the door. And I used to carry weapons all the time because I was living on the streets, right? So when I first heard that, I was like, oh, okay. I don't have to do that anymore. And so I got to the point where as I stayed, I kept hearing more things that I could use for this new way of life that you guys were talking about. And, I was still so afraid. I was so afraid that it wasn't going to work for me. I remember one time I went to a meeting and there was this, you know, we would go out to the meeting after the meeting, right, to the diner. And we were all a mess. We were all brand new in recovery. We were just hanging on to each other to stay clean. We just ran in packs. And we'd go to the diner, and none of us had any money. And, you know, we would move all the chairs around, and we would make lots of noise because, you know, we were a bunch of new recovering addicts that didn't know how to act out in public, right? And we never had money for tips, and we only ever had money for, like, French fries and milkshakes, right? That was it. And I had nothing. And the woman that later became my sponsor, the one that told me to call her every day for 30 days, she used to say to me all the time, are you hungry? Do you want something to eat? And I was so ashamed that I was still hustling and that I still didn't have enough. And I would say, no, I'm cool. Thanks, though. Right? Like, all proud of nothing. Right? Proud with nothing to be proud of. And she would say, it's okay. You can eat. And I'm like, no, I'm good. And this went on for weeks. And I would hustle in between meetings and get some scraps to eat. And this woman would always say, are you hungry? Do you want something to eat? And one day I was at the diner and she finally pushed a plate of French fries in front of me. And she said, please eat. You need to eat. And I looked at her and I said, I don't have anything. And she said, that's okay. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. But then she also said, one day you will have something, and when you do, you give it to the next person. And that was my first understanding of what it means when we say you got to give it away to keep it. I'm going to tell you, those were the best French fries I ever ate in my entire life. And it was more than just the French fries. Everything I have today is a result of Narcotics Anonymous. And what I have, it's my responsibility as a member to give it away so that I can keep it, right? And so that the next person can give it to the next person. So then it was time to start working some steps. There's this recovering addict. His name is Bob B. He has since passed away. His story was in the first few editions up to the, I think what I want to say, the fifth edition of the NA Basic Text. And I'm pretty sure it's still in the sixth edition. But his story was in the basic text, and it was, I found the only NA meeting in the world, and Bob B was down in Los Angeles, and he told the story about baking a cake that meant, it made so much sense to me. I heard him speak one time early on in my recovery. I probably had about 6 months, and he said, you know, when you want to bake a cake, like, you get the box that has the picture of the cake on the front of it. And then you turn the box around and you read the ingredients and you follow the steps one at a time and in order if you want your cake to look like the cake on the front. And he said, that's how steps work. If you want what we have, you'll do what we do. If you want this new way of life that we talk about, you'll work some steps. This is a 12-step program. And follow them in order. Put all the right ingredients in. But there was something that Bob didn't talk about that I think it's important to talk about that I figured out by working the steps, is you put all the right ingredients in, but there's something about baking a cake, right? Once you put all the ingredients in and you follow all the directions, then you have to put it in the oven and then you have to wait for it to actually bake. And for me, my recovery has been a series of that, right? It's been a series of working steps. and then waiting for the results of working the steps. It doesn't always come fast. Sometimes there's that oven time, right? There's the hall time, and there's that waiting time. And life continues to show up whether I'm waiting for the results or not. So I had to learn, and I continue to learn, how to do the work around here if I want to stay clean and live this new way of life. Do the work, and then wait for the results. And when that has happened for me, the results have been sometimes amazing, sometimes pretty boring, right? Sometimes I just learn how to, like, go to work every day, you know, like everybody else in the world does. Sometimes it's a lot of pain. But all of it has led to this life that I have today that is worth staying clean for. And so I continue to work steps. You know, when I had around 10 years clean, I moved to California, and I was in a whole new world. I had never been more than 15 miles outside of Center City, Philadelphia in my entire life. I had my entire program around me. I had my sponsor that entire time. And I came to California. And, you know, what do you do, right? What do I do? I do the same things that I did when I first got to NA. The same principles applied. I went to a meeting every day for 90 days. I got in service. I got a new sponsor in California. I first moved to Southern California, so I got a sponsor in Southern California. She said the same thing when I asked her to sponsor me, by the way. She said, call me every day for 30 days and I'll think about it. And I was like, what is it with these? Do they have like a manual, a sponsorship manual? Well, they were just given to me what they were given. And now I give that to the people I sponsor, right? So I did that. I called her every day for 30 days and she continued to be my sponsor. I worked a new set of steps about moving to California and the grief that I felt over that move and the change and the fear and, you know, the uncertainty and the faith and all of that was required. And then I got in service. So I did all the same things, right? But here's the difference in that move for me was, that's, I think, when I really connected with my higher power, right? Like, here's what I'm going to tell you. I suffer from a lot of religious trauma. And, you know, going through the foster care system, I was forced to do a lot of things that caused a lot of trauma. And I had really no control over it. So I was very much against the whole concept of God and church and, you know, synagogues and all that stuff, right? So Narcotics Anonymous told me that it didn't really matter what my higher power was as long as I had one. And, you know, when I moved to California, I really had to rely on that higher power. And here's what I've come to understand. Someone with a whole lot of wisdom told me a long time ago that God is good, orderly direction, and you find it where you can. And for me, Narcotics Anonymous has always been that good orderly direction from the moment I walked in here. You know, the step work is good orderly direction. The suggestions that my sponsor makes, that's all good orderly direction. And so I believe today that my higher power speaks through those things, right? My higher power evolves over time. I have never put a name to it. Sometimes it's just the universe. Sometimes it's the, you know, the breeze that comes through on a beautiful summer evening. Sometimes it's the ocean. Sometimes it's the woods. All of those things that lead me to believe that there's a power that is keeping me clean that I could never do on my own. That works for me, right? And that trip to California was the first time that I really had to rely on that in a way that I was able to. It's not like I hadn't always relied on a higher power, but remember, I didn't have to understand it for it to work. Like, my higher power was working in my life the entire time. But that was the first time that I really believed it and that I could speak to it in a way that made sense to me, right? So I just keep going on, right? When I got married, you know, it was before It was before gay folk were allowed to get married in the United States, so it was a domestic partnership union, and so my wife and I came out to California together. And when I had about 17 years clean, we got divorced. And I want to share the story because I think it's really important. At any point in my recovery, and there have been times when I stop putting my recovery as my first priority, I'm in trouble, right? At any point that I start thinking I don't have to go to this many meetings, I'm in trouble. At any point that I start thinking that I'm running the show again, I'm in trouble. When I went through that divorce, I got in trouble. Like my spirit was, was relapsing. My emotions were relapsing. The only thing that hadn't relapsed was the actual physical picking up of a drug, right? But I was a mess. I was a mess. Life on life's terms was, I didn't like it anymore. I didn't want to play along anymore. I was frustrated. I was angry. I was devastated. And so I'm going to tell the story to reinforce the fact that I am not perfect. And the only thing that I've done perfectly since I got to Narcotics Anonymous was not pick up no matter what. So I had 17 years clean. I was going through a divorce. I was living in San Diego. And I had gotten word that my soon-to-be ex was on a date with the person that I believe she was having an affair with. So I lost my shit, right? Just lost my shit. So I went. I heard that they were at the San Diego Convention Center. So I was driving on the way to the San Diego Convention Center. And I was ready to give up everything. I was done, right? I didn't believe that my higher power had my back anymore. I didn't believe that. I just, there comes a point, I believe, in recovery when everything that we think we know about recovery changes, in the sense that I thought I was doing all the right things. And maybe I was. But life still shows up. Real life still shows up. And I was unequipped at that point to deal with that life at that time. So I'm on my way to the convention center and I'm just going to, everybody's going down, right? I've had it. I get to this train track, this crossing track, right before the convention center. Literally, all you have to do is get past this train track and be at the San Diego Convention Center. And a train came through. So I was the first one there. The lights started blinking. The cross gates went down. This train comes through and I'm fuming, right? Now, mind you, I had gone to a meeting. I had not called my sponsor. I had not prayed. I had not done any of that. I was just bound and determined to just set fire to everything, right? So the train's going. It's one of the longest trains. You know, it's a big Amtrak train. It's going, going, going. All of a sudden, the train stops. The train stops. It backs up a little bit. It tries to go forward again, and then it stops again. I'm like, what is happening, right? Nothing, nothing, nothing. The train has stopped. The traffic is backing up behind me. The people that are waiting to cross the crosswalk are all lined up alongside of me. I'm trapped in my car at this train track. There's no way out. We're sitting, sitting, sitting. Finally, some cop comes by and says, the train hit something. We're going to be here for a minute. So turn your car off and relax. And I am losing my mind, right? 45 minutes, I was stuck there. But a miracle happened because I believe miracles happen in Narcotics Anonymous. 45 minutes gave me enough time to remember that I needed to call my sponsor. And so I did. It gave me enough time to pray. And so I did. When the train finally cleared, when they got everything cleared out, I turned my butt around and went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I share that because we talk a lot about don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Sometimes it takes 45 minutes in an Amtrak train, right? The point is don't leave no matter what. And sometimes my higher power will intervene once again, like they did when I first got to Narcotics Anonymous. And that's when things truly changed in a way for my recovery that led me down this, a new journey, right? We have a book called Living Clean, The Journey Continues. And I think that's when my journey really started continuing, where it was more than, can I talk the talk or can I walk the walk? Am I truly applying principles in my everyday life, even when shit is bad, even when stuff is great? Am I still applying the same principles in my life today? And so today, right? So today I have a sponsor. I moved up to Northern California about 15 years ago. I got a sponsor here in Northern California. My sponsor has 48 years clean. She just celebrated 48 years in Narcotics Anonymous. I want what she has, right? So I continue to do what she suggests. I continue to work steps. I continue to be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. I sponsor some of the most amazing women in my life. I have sponsors all over. I have a sponsor who lives in Africa. I have a sponsor who lives in Washington State. I have a sponsor. I have two sponsees. I'm sorry, sponsees. I have two sponsees that live in Oakland, California. I have a sponsee that lives in Nashville, Kentucky, right? And once a month, we all get together on this online platform and have a meeting, right? And check in with each other. My life today, I have another grandkid visiting us right now. That's the second grandkid that's come to visit this summer. My children trust me with their children, right? I worked in a state job for almost 21 years, and I was able to retire. And so guess what I did? I went to a meeting every day for 90 days. This was all during the pandemic. So it was the easiest 90 meetings that I've ever done because it was so accessible, right? I worked a new round of steps with my sponsor about this new journey now that I'm retired, right? Life continues to show up. I have some health issues that I'm working through right now, and it's all okay because I'm clean today. I'll share this last thing and then I'm going to be quiet because I think my time's coming to an end. A few years ago, I was working on a set of steps and I was really struggling because I just didn't want to do it, right? Like I was just, oh, how many times do I have to work these steps? How many meetings do I have to go to? Like how many, you know, when I've been clean, my clean date is November 22nd, 1987. I've been to plenty of meetings, right? Sometimes I get tired of doing this recovery thing, right? Sometimes I get tired of doing the work. So I was just moaning in a meeting one time about how tired I was doing the work. And there was a youngster in the meeting. She had about a year clean. And she was in school for the first time. She was like going to college. And I was just bitching about, you know, my high class problems of life, not wanting to, you know, being tired of doing this recovery thing. And that I shared that I didn't even have a notebook to write in. Like, I just didn't even want to do it. So this youngster comes up to me after the meeting. And she says, hi, I heard you share. And I'm in college right now, and I'm really excited. In fact, I just got all these new notebooks. And so she pulls her backpack around, and she pulls out a brand new, unused, three-ring notebook. She says, I thought you could use this more than me right now. So she gave me the notebook. It has always been Narcotics Anonymous. I gave her a big old hug. And then she said, oh, and by the way, you've been clean longer than I've been alive. And I was like, okay, all right, I got you. Thank you. Thank you. And this youngster was giving me exactly what I needed in that moment, which was a big dose of humility, a big dose of gratitude, a big dose of willingness, right? If you're new here and some of this doesn't make sense yet, it's okay. Don't use no matter what. Keep coming back. The three most important principles it says in our literature are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. When I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, I was honest that my life was unmanageable and that I could not control it and that my disease was stronger than me. I was open that Narcotics Anonymous was hopefully going to give me what I needed to get out of the misery that I was in. And I was willing to do what you told me to do. I continue to be honest, open, and willing, if nothing else, in my life today. And the rest is subject to change. That same youngster used to say, I have a year clean. I've never been clean this long. I have no idea what's coming next, so I'm going to keep coming back. I have 34 years clean. I've never been clean this long. I have no idea what's coming next, so I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you again so much for letting me be here. Thank you for allowing me to share my recovery with all of you today and for you sharing yours with me. And I think that's about it.